Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined me this morning. I have some special guests this morning that I'm excited to share with all of you. I'm going to bring in Shelly and my other three callers I've already brought in, but I want to talk a little bit about them before I introduce them. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you, honey?
I'm doing real good. I'm looking forward to today's show. I think it's a hot topic.
Yeah. Of course, it was hard for me to find stats, but the stats are pretty bad in regard to identity theft. And the reason it was hard for me to find stats is because now everybody thinks they have some answers. So I'm going to be very, very interested to hear what Danny and his new associates have to introduce to us. I do want to mention that they have had a private donor who has stepped up to the plate and offered our first caller some coverage for their identity theft through this organization if they call in first today. I announced it on Facebook this morning and on Renee's Heart to Heart page. So I'm hoping some of you call in. I want to bring Danny on live. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning.
How are you, dear?
Good. The outstanding. First thing first, happy birthday.
Ah, thank you, my dear.
Oh,
thank you.
Wonderful, Daniel.
Yes, you know, 66. Who'd have thought I'd have done it? You know, 66. Good Lord Almighty. So,
Good Lord Almighty.
Amen, amen. I think about it now, and to be honest with you, the Renee on the inside doesn't ever feel any different than who she's always been. The Renee on the outside, however, I have a statement about the golden years. They're more along rusty years than they are golden, so be that as it may. I could maybe I'll start drinking some WD-40 or something and see if that helps.
No.
That's
hilarious.
So, Dan, I would like you to introduce our other callers. They're all live, so you can just speak to them on the show and introduce them to us, and let's talk about this.
You got it. Good morning, and I'm proud to be an associate of two individuals, Mark Brown and Alan Holt. Mr. Brown has extensive experience within the identity theft and security industries, spanning more than 27 years. Mr. Brown is the founder of Identity Theft Business Solutions, and Mr. Holt works with a number of organizations and contacts all throughout the country, which is really what has made this business successful. And Mark Brown has done extensive research and has worked so much within this arena, has been so successful that Safeguard PII is the number one company for identity theft, the identity theft solution. And what we're doing is we've put together a team, and they've brought me on board, and I'm very, very excited to be part of that. And we're hoping other people will join the crusade. So I'm going to go ahead and allow Mark to go ahead and speak and introduce himself a little bit more, because he's his own very special person. So, Mr. Brown.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning. And happy birthday as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. Well, let me go ahead
fill us in.
Sure.
Good idea.
All right, excellent. Just a real quick, I guess, overview of who I am and maybe a little bit of a resume in terms of what we've done in the industry. Again, my name is Mark Brown. As Danny said, over 27 years in privacy management. I grew up professionally at the PGA of America, Professional Golfers Association, where I was responsible for, I was a database administrator there and responsible for all of the, you know, protecting all of the professional golfers and amateur golfers across the world within the PGA of America's database. And after 18 years and 18 years spent there, I decided that my services were needed by more companies than just one. And so I got out and opened up Identity Theft Business Solutions, primarily because I found out that a couple of things. Number one, businesses were responsible for more than 50% of our personal identifiable information being lost or stolen. And understanding that the government, the federal government, was actually going to be start to pass laws that require businesses to put certain things in place to better safeguard our information and customer and employees' information. And so I decided to get involved and to help businesses understand, number one, you know, what those requirements were and then how to comply with federal privacy laws and ultimately help them implement solutions and best practices that would better protect customer and employee information. And along that way, decided that providing some sort of identity theft protection would be a huge help and a step in the right direction for all consumers nationwide. So that's pretty much what we've been doing since 2003, actually working with businesses and protecting individuals from this hideous crime.
Very interesting. Can you explain? Just because, you know, I'm one of those kind of people who, if I'm interested in something, I have to really understand it. So I may be a little overbearing. I apologize for that up front. If I think about this on a whole, and we've had several shows about identity theft, and I shared with Danny many years ago, I'm working in Miami. I'm living in Pompano Beach. My brother calls me and said, Reena, I just stopped by to, you said something was wrong with the refrigerator. I stopped by to check it and your electricity's off. And I said, what? I said, okay. So I call FP&L and they tell me, oh, yes. Hi, Mrs. Brewer. Your husband called and said you're going to Jamaica. So he requested that we turn off the power. And I said, really? My husband's going to Jamaica, huh? So I said, please turn my power back on. And to stop that from ever happening, which a lot of people do now, I have a code that I give to them still today, and that was almost 20 years ago, that they can't do anything to my account with FP&L unless I give them this code word. So then I go to my checking account, and $300 is missing from my checking account. I never did find out how they managed all these things and how it was important to turn off my power, unless that's what started the game and they realized they could do that. I don't know. And then in those same years is when people were taking IRS checks from mailboxes. And my daughter's IRS check was stolen. 6 months later, they break into a room in downtown Miami and find an old-fashioned typewriter and a photocopier that's making IDs to cash all these checks. So that was the beginning when we first realized that, or when I first realized that people, you know, could steal from you that way. So now, in the day of the technology that we have, I mean, our phones and our, I got a big laugh this morning because the iPhone 6 with all that falderal, now the phone is bending after all those poor people waited in line to get the cutting edge in technology. The phones bend when you put them in your pocket. That's a side note. Anyway, now it's rampant because there's just so many ways to do this. How do we even get a handle on it? I really need to understand this, because now people will call me and ask me to explain to them before, you know, before they move forward. So please start from the basics and explain to us how you intend, or how your organization has been able to come up with the kind of answers that are going to be beneficial and will really work.
Excellent question. I'd like to start off just kind of re-educating your listeners on this term called identity theft. Is that fair?
Sure. Absolutely.
First of all, I want to re-educate, if I can, on a particular area. Most people in the media at large has trained us that on the fact that identity theft is really a financial crime. And I'm going to share some things, and I'll be very brief here, but I'll share some areas with you that will show that identity theft is much larger than just a financial crime. In fact, when you think about the financial crime in today's world, if someone puts a fraudulent charge on your credit card, you actually have 60 days to report that fraudulent charge, and if you do it within 60 days, those charges will be removed off of your account. More than likely, you'll be given or issued a new bank card, a new credit card, or whatever it is, whatever that instrument is. Also, if someone puts a fraudulent charge against your bank account, many of us know already we can call the bank within 60 days. Now you can call the bank, and the bank will, you know, our monies are FDIC insured. They'll put our money back after some short investigation. But you know, if the charge was not yours, and you can prove that it was not your charge, was not your check, then the banks will put your money back. And so,
right.
You know, many people wonder, well, why do I buy identity theft protection? Because, you know, our credit cards and our bank accounts are basically, we're protected by federal law. You know, they have to either take the charge off or put the money back. And I say to people every single day of the week that I'm working and educating people that you don't buy identity theft protection to protect a credit card or protect a bank account for the simple reason that I just mentioned. You can make a phone call and solve the problem.
Right.
Well, why do you buy identity theft, and what are the real issues out here? Well, the common areas of identity theft, I'll start off with a driver's license. If you ever wondered how a thief actually goes into a bank, banks are pretty good. The banking industry is pretty good at, you know, at least checking for an ID to make sure that, you know, you are the person that needs to be accessing the person's account. Well, the way that the thieves are actually able to do this is that they have an ID checking guide that has an exact replica of every driver's license in the United States and Canada, also has a copy of passports. And in the new age, in the digital world, the identity thieves are actually scanning in a copy of the driver's license, changing the thumbnail picture to their picture, and putting the victim's information on that fraudulent license, printing it, laminating it, and they're actually going with a legitimate-looking ID with their picture and the victim's information. So that really that's one of the ways that identity thieves are perpetrating the crime. Now, once they have a legitimate-looking ID, now they go to work. They do several things. And so these are the more common areas of identity theft, and these are the reasons that people should find a way to protect themselves. Number one, child identity theft is on the climb. The identity thieves have figured out that they can use a child's social security number, which is nowadays is, you know, assigned at birth. When I was born, you know, I got my social security number at the age of 12 when I, you know, started my first job. And so because social security numbers are assigned at birth, the identity thieves are now taking social security numbers of children and actually using them, because they feel that they'll have 18 years to use that social without any pushback. And people will find out, children, I can show you 4-month-old babies that have already written fraudulent checks in their own names and on blacklist banks. have felonies in their name. We have kids that are now graduating high school and finding out that, you know, they're getting turned down, their college applications are getting turned down because they have felonies in their name, or they found out that they've already been receiving financial aid. Someone has already filled out FAFSA in their name and have been receiving checks, financial aid checks, for them to go to college. So it's child identity theft is a large part of the crime. The second area that I'll cover with you is tax fraud. Obviously, we know that people are filling out their IRS tax return and sending it in, and the IRS is sending back a notice saying, listen, we're sorry, but this is the second return that we received, and sometimes the third return that we've received them. Checks have already been mailed, and last year, to give you an idea of how prevalent this particular area is, last year, 5.2 billion fraudulent dollars were sent out by our federal government, by the IRS. I don't know if any of you caught the 60-minute excerpt the other night, but they were discussing this. $5.2 billion was sent out in fraudulent checks to the identity thieves last year. And then the next area that you have is, and this is a huge area, one of the fastest growing areas is medical identity theft. We have just like we have the centralized credit bureaus for our credit history, there's a centralized medical record on each and every one of us. And it's called your Medical Information Bureau, the MIB. And what the identity thieves are doing is they're actually, with the fraudulent ID, going in and getting medical treatment. They want the treatment. They don't want the bill. And they're leaving the victim with the erroneous medical history. Very, very serious problem here. And so what people are finding out is that they're getting turned down denied for insurances and various life insurance and those types of protection programs. And it's because the identities have actually put fraudulent or erroneous information onto their medical records. People finding out they have HIV, diabetes, cancer on their medical record. And the real issue is that they're trying to solve this problem going to their local doctor's office or their local hospital that they've dealt with, when in fact 99% of the hospitals and doctor's offices actually subscribe to your Medical Information Bureau record. And just like we get one free copy of our credit report every year, we also get one free copy of our medical report. MIB.com is where you'd go, and you can actually, you know, and you should, I encourage you to do so, actually pull one free copy of your medical report every year. And the only reason, and you all may remember the years when it was illegal for us to look at our credit report, now we get one free copy of it. Now we're also getting one free copy of our medical report. And it's all because of the issue of identity theft, so that we have the opportunity to look at our history and make sure that the information that's there really belongs to us.
Wow.
So medical identity theft is absolutely incredibly damaging to an identity theft victim.
So how do you get a medical report, though? Because I thought that was just held by a particular hospital. How would you know what hospital to check at? Is there a central database?
Excellent question. Yeah. There is a central database. It's called the MIB. It's called the Medical Information Bureau. And by law, each and every one of us can go to MIB.com, which is MedicalInformationBureau.com, and actually request a free copy once a year of our medical history. Absolutely.
Oh, okay, excellent.
Okay.
So, Mark, in that, or let's stop here for a second, because I can hear the minds whizzing of all my older friends. It's just MIB.com, not www.mib.com.
Actually, you can type in www.mib.com, yes.
Okay. And then they can get in there, and that's a consolidation of every hospital they've been in, every doctor they've seen, everything. Is that true?
The major illnesses, exactly. The insurance industry uses the MIB records to determine, you know, the risk level of a particular client, of a prospective client.
Right,
wow.
Right.
Yep.
You know, I took an insurance class and didn't pass it, I'm sad to say. I missed it by 2 points. I've been kicking myself ever since, and if you have ever imagined anything, imagining me kicking myself is very humorous. So this, they mention in the insurance class, of course, that when you sell a policy to somebody, a health insurance policy to somebody, that you have to bring it back. There has to be some negotiations. And they did talk about MIB.com. And so I had heard that before. But I didn't ask the question, and the teacher didn't later. I didn't ask the question in class. I asked it later. And he didn't really have the answer. So is this accumulated through databases? Is this is it really accurate, I guess, is what I'm asking, Mark, because that's what all the older folks are going to ask me.
Well, in terms of the accuracy, because of identity theft, we know now that there's, you know, people finding that there's erroneous information on the MIB report. But what's more important is that 99% of doctors and hospitals subscribe to the MIB and report to it. And it's the one central repository that the insurance industry uses to determine, you know, the whether a person can be insured or not.
I see. Okay. Well, that, I think that's good news. You guys all are very young, so you're probably not so worried about this at this point in time. But we have a group called the Golden Girls, and most of us, except for Shelly, she's a spring chicken, are all over the age of 60. So we talk about these things, and I have a couple of girlfriends who are turning 80 very shortly and are still very active. It's I'm glad you're sharing some of this other stuff with us, because they aren't going to know about this. This is great news. And I hope those of you listening out there are getting some use out of this information. This is very valuable. So go ahead, honey. I'm sorry for interrupting you. I just want to make sure everybody's paying attention.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Well, the next couple of areas, and they're quick, we have criminal identity theft, and we have we have a new crime called house stealing.
Oh, yeah.
What the identity thieves are doing is the identity thieves are actually going to the county databases and pulling the records, public deeds, public record deed records, and actually getting, you know, the owner's information and address. And they're actually nowadays quick claim deeding. Quick claim deeding property over into their name. We have people and members of our service that came to be members because they've been paying on their mortgage for 5 or 10 years and later finding out that their property, the actual property, was quick claim deeded years ago, 5 years ago. And so it's a major, the FBI has said it's the latest scam on the block where the identity thieves are actually transferring real property over into their name without the property owner knowing that that's the case that has happened.
Yes, yes.
How does that happen? How does somebody correct that?
Well, it's interesting. In our country, fortunately, you can go and obviously you have to prove that you weren't that it was not your transaction that quick claim deeded the property over into someone else's name, but sometimes it's if I can say an act of Congress to get your property back. You definitely have to know how to the proper procedures, the proper ways to go about, you know, reclaiming your property. We had a situation where a young lady, and this was one of the Golden Girls, if I can say this, but she had a not of your group, but of your, at least of your age, but she had a fire at her home, and insurance, a small fire. The insurance adjusters came to said, listen, we need to speak with the owner. And the young lady said, I've owned this property for more than 40 years. And the insurance adjusters explained that, no, you know, your name is not on the property as the owner. These two gentlemen here, their names are on the property. And the two gentlemen that were on the property, that owned the property, were the gentlemen that actually did a reverse mortgage for that young lady.
So oh,
they had
wow.
Actually, yep, they had actually quick claim deeded the property over into their name after they put a reverse mortgage in place for the client.
Oh, wow.
Major issues here. I'll finish up with criminal identity theft. People are getting stopped for traffic tickets and finding out that someone has used their information in a crime, and there are warrants out for their arrest. That's pretty, you know, that's been going on for years. And now the latest area of identity theft is called synthetic identity theft. In some cases, the identity thieves do not have all of the victim's information. Maybe they have, you know, just a social security number, or maybe they have just a name. Typically speaking, when they have a social security number, what the identity thieves will do is they will couple the identity, the social security number that they have with a different name and go and seek credit in the new identity. So they will actually build a new identity with a social security number and a different name. And how you spot this is when you check your credit report, you should look for a subfile existing on your credit report. Obviously, you have the main file, which is your first file that you actually opened with the credit reporting agencies. But if something major has changed about your identity, like a date of birth or like a name change, ladies, sometimes you get married and, you know, that creates a name change, and so that will create a subfile on your credit report. But when the identity thieves actually create a new identity with using your social, you find on your credit report when you review it once a year that you have a subfile, and if you look at that subfile, it may have a different more date of birth, and that's an indication that someone is out there using your information, your social security number, coupled with a different name or a different date of birth and other identifiable information. So those are the key areas of identity theft in today's world. These are the problems. People are spending up to 600 hours solving one problem while the identity thief is actually out there creating yet another problem in that person's name. And so these are the areas that that the crime is being perpetrated.
Wow. Wow. So now I've looked at the information that Daniel gave me this morning. I went online and checked out the document that actually comes from Homeland Security. And as I said, we've done shows about this before, and we've talked about this before. And I know at least three people that have had something like that done to the home that they're living in. All three cases, they were renting the home and all of a sudden were evicted because somebody had done a quit claim and never paid a mortgage and was collecting rent from them. In some cases, water was supposed to be a part of the deal with the rent and the water bill wasn't paid. I know that in Pompano Beach, there are homes sitting right now that nobody can actually even utilize because they are in such a mess. They have no water because the water bill got astronomical, and water company will not turn back on the water until some of that bill is paid. They don't care by whom. It's sad. And, you know, there's an interesting thing on television here lately. There's been a something like there are 30,000 homes or something just in this area that are sitting empty and abandoned. And, you know, here we are faced with one of our largest problems, which is homelessness. all of this for me is disheartening, and there must be a way to figure it out. I think this is one of the beginning steps, is to stop all of the crime. This is a crime. This is a major crime, stealing somebody else's credit and stealing somebody else's home and stealing somebody else's identity. It's a major, major crime. So I applaud you guys for realizing the importance of this. So now tell us how your organization can help.
All right, very good. Well, first, you know, I'm a certified identity theft risk management specialist, and I have the opportunity to look across all identity theft protection programs and really choose the program that, and I remain independent so that I can always choose the program that is doing the best job monitoring and protecting and then restoring, you know, someone's information that's been victimized. And so a couple of things that stand out with the program that we currently offer. Number one, a profile is created by the member. When you sign up to our services, the first thing that we will do is allow you to create a personal or family profile. One of the issues that I have with credit monitoring programs versus identity theft protection programs is that, you know, the number one indicator for me of a service that I don't want to join in terms of protecting my identity is a service that asks me for my name, my address, my Social Security number, date of birth, and then the next question is whether I would like to monitor one credit bureau or three credit bureaus, when in fact there are four credit bureaus. So that's the first indicator that this is not a program that I'd like to sign up to. And the reason being is that that program is really focused on credit monitoring, when hopefully what I've described this morning helps you understand that our identity is much larger and much more widespread than just our credit report. And
wow.
So what we are doing is we actually allow our members to create a profile. You know, your family makeup and personal identifiable information is different, may be different from my family profile and my family makeup. You may have five kids. I may have three kids. You may have a medical ID card. I may have a veteran's ID card. You may have someone that lives out of the country that has an ID number there. I may not. And so we can't fit every family into one box and say we have a way to protect you. So the first thing that I look for in an identity theft protection program is, does the program allow me to indicate what my personal identifiable information is for me and my family, and have a way to monitor those particular items that I've put into the profile? So that's number one. Number two is, where is the program monitoring? Is the program just monitoring credit? I never sign up to those programs because my identity is larger than credit. So if you look at our program, what we're doing, the program that I selected to protect my customers, we're actually monitoring the black markets, the internet black markets, where the identity thieves are buying, selling, and trading the information. We're monitoring the criminal databases, public databases nationwide, making sure that our members' information is not being used in a crime. We're monitoring utility databases, public utility databases nationwide. And I heard you mention utility. It's very interesting of why we're monitoring utility databases, because what the identity thieves have figured out, and all of us, we know this because most of us have a driver's license. We know that a utility bill is a form of ID for receiving a legitimate driver's license. And
yeah.
So the identity thieves have figured this out as well. And what they will do is they will go and open up a light bill, a water bill, or a utility bill in the name of the victim, and they will take utility bills down to Department of Motor Vehicle and actually get a legitimate driver's license with their picture and the victim's information.
Oh, my God.
Yes, so we're monitoring the utility databases nationwide, because you need to know that, you know, you've opened up a water bill in North Carolina or in another state, another area. Our members need to know that. And so we're monitoring thousands of public databases, and we're monitoring for international activity through the internet black markets and peer-to-peer file sharing networks, where the identity thieves are buying, selling, and trading the information. We give instant alerts. And one of the things that we're, you know, if there's been really no activity, our members will notify them once a month that, hey, we've been, you know, we've monitored your information over all of these databases. We haven't found any activity. And you'll get a green mark, which says, or check that says, you have a low risk of identity theft. Or you'll get a yellow that says you have an and that your identity actually has been, we found some things, we've escalated your identity or your monitoring to another level, and it's in the caution area. Or you'll get a red mark, which says we've really found that your information has been used fraudulently.
Wow.
And so if you're a yellow or a red mark, We've already contacted you, and we're working with you to help you identify and solve the issue that we found. Okay? And so monitoring is the first step to protecting yourself, to understanding what's going on with your identity.
Mark,
and
I do have one question.
Please.
With regard to making yourself vulnerable for identity theft, I was telling Rini that I just got a new Galaxy S5 Samsung phone, and I'm really a late bloomer when it comes to using cell phones. I just use them for, like, talking and texting. I don't even go on the internet. I don't do half the stuff that most people do with their phones, because I just never got – I never used them that way. So now I'm becoming more and more dependent on my phone. A couple of my family members had games loaded on their phone, so I loaded a couple of games like Solitaire, you know, just the Solitaire and Tetris, you know, games like that. I like logic games or things like that.
Sure.
And one of the things I noticed, I went to load a couple of the games, and a bunch of them are free, but a couple that I went to download on my phone, I stopped and backed out because they were asking for permissions on my phone that I was like, why do they need this? Like, there was a list. They wanted the device and app history. They wanted access to my identity. They wanted access to the location of my phone. Now, some of these files I could see why the game would need to access, like the photo media files, because they have to
sure.
take pictures stuff. Wi-Fi connection made sense to me. And the device ID, I guess, made sense to me because it has to be able to find my phone. But the personal identity didn't make sense to me, and my app history didn't make sense to me. So there's a couple of things that didn't make sense to me that it was asking for, so I backed out. And not all of the games ask for all of those. Some of them only ask for, like, photo media files and the Wi-Fi connection, and that's it. So I've been very careful with some of the games that I've downloaded, but I'm wondering if people are – is this a risk, and should people – be wary of just downloading any free game that's available?
Well, I can tell you that I've experienced the same thing. And one of the areas that I think really, you know, alerted me to stop the install is when it said that it would also access my contact list.
Yes,
that
I saw
that
on
not only,
one of the most. Right,
yeah,
you're right. See that.
Exactly. Not only wanted my information, access to my information, but access to everyone that I had in my phone and their
right.
information.
Right.
And so I did the same thing. I back out of those applications and I don't use them. Some,
right.
you know, it's some, you know, sometimes you'll have I think mine was a navigation program that said, you know, we needed access to, and they ask you for permission to gain access to actually every piece of information that you have on that phone. And
mm-hmm.
when I've run into that, I've actually backed out of those applications as well.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it is that people should be concerned about and then pay attention to then.
Absolutely. Let me do this so that we can understand the vulnerability of our information. And this typically helps someone to understand, you know, because we have people. I have different people say, oh, you can have my identity. If you can get something with it, God bless you. And they're thinking of this being more of a credit issue, and that's what they're speaking of. So here's what I'd like to do. You know, I've explained the areas of identity theft. Let me just talk just for a brief moment about the vulnerability of our information. I want you to think about your name, your address, your Social Security number, date of birth, and driver's license. Just those five pieces of information: name, address, date of birth, Social Security number, and driver's license number. And I want you to think about the people that are in your personal circle. Your listeners should think about this. You think about your personal circle, you know, people that you love, people that you know, your family members and friends. They come to your home, you go to their home. How many of those individuals actually have your name, your address, your Social Security number, date of birth, and driver's license? Typically speaking, when I ask that question, I get a very low number. I get a 1 or 3 or 5. I don't think I've ever received a number higher than 5. And so in my professional opinion, we're doing a pretty good job protecting our personal information among our family members and friends. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to change the question so you can see the vulnerability of our information. Since the day that you were born to the age that you are right now, how many different businesses have you willingly given your name, your address, your Social Security number, date of birth, and driver's license number to? Now it becomes a number that we can't number. And so if you really want to understand the vulnerability of your information, think of your lifetime, or, you know, over the years of your lifetime, how many different businesses you've given your information to. And what the Federal Trade Commission is reporting every single year is that businesses are more than 50% responsible for our information being lost or stolen.
Wow.
So this is why we have to have some sort of monitoring in place to let us know if the business has had a breach of our information and someone has come in contact. I've talked to so many people that say, well, I never go online. I don't do some of the things that we just talked about. I don't install applications on my phone. I make sure that, you know, my information is locked down. And when I ask them how many different businesses have they given their information to over their lifetime, and if that's the majority reason why information is being lost or stolen, you actually, it's an education to you that we're vulnerable. Whether you like it or not, whether you think you're locking down your information today or not, our information is already out there, so we have to have something that is monitoring and notifying us of the illegal use of our information. And then also to restore the problem, when thefts occur. And so so the next area of our program is actually restoration. You know, I tell people all day long that, you know, identity theft is no different than any other crime. You know, when you're in a grocery store or at home, you know, someone can break in your car. That's a crime. When we find that out, we go into restoration mode. We call the insurance company. We call the police department. We call the window company. We begin to restore the problem. Well, because we've willingly given our information out for so many years to so many different businesses, when we find that our information is being misused, when we find that our information is being used in a fraudulent situation, we have to go into restoration mode. We have to go and spend the 600 hours that it takes to actually solve the problem and restore our good name. Well, the next thing that our program actually does is it will spend those 600 hours for you on your behalf and actually restore your good name all the way through prosecution of the identity thief. And the reason why we work with the police and the authorities to try to arrest the identity thief is so that maybe, just maybe, you know, because your Social Security number hasn't changed, your driver's license number is not going to change, so the identity thief already has that information. But maybe if the identity thief got arrested for using your particular information, when they get out of jail, they'll choose to go a different route and not use your information, you know, again. So that's why we not only restore your good name in terms of cleaning up the records and making sure that your name is put back and your identity is put back to where it should be, but we're also trying to arrest the thief so that from a preventative measure, standpoint, they won't, they'll choose not to use that information again.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
You know, does anybody have the reason? You mentioned something before about you got you got your Social Security card when you got your first job. Well, I think that's true of all of us except for maybe Danny, because Danny's very young. Now, when a child is born, you're instructed by the hospital to get their Social Security number right away.
And absolutely.
That always bothered me with grandchildren and stuff for the reasons that we're talking about today. Because a kid, I don't know that, the ones that are like 17, 18, 19, and 20 and up in that bracket now certainly know their Social Security numbers. But I have great-grandchildren, and I have one grandson who's only 8 who has a Social Security number. And I worry about that for the reasons that you mentioned early on in the show. And you give that to every school that you take them to. If you're a mover, somebody that's in the armed forces or something, and you travel all over and your kid gets registered in this school, that school, that school, and this school, do you think that the danger has been exacerbated a little bit by handing out Social Security numbers at birth?
Without question.
So why do we think they did that? Does anybody have any answers as to why that all of a sudden became necessary? I mean, if Social Security
absolutely I do. You know, I was born in Long Island, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yet my Social Security number represents the state of Florida. And so if you know anything about the Social Security number, you know that the first 3 digits indicate the area of the country that you were born in. The second set of numbers indicate the time of the century that you were born. And then the last 4 digits, which, you know, this is my pet peeve when I hear, you know, oh, I only give the last 4 digits of my social. Well, the last 4 digits is the personal identifiable information.
Wow.
Because the first 2 sets of digits is pretty standard. You can know a New York Social Security number versus a Florida Social Security number just by the digits, because they have a different set of a different series of numbers that are consistent from those particular areas. So the first set of a Social Security number, the first 3 numbers are indicate what area of the country you were born in. So the identity thieves are smart enough to know that if they can figure out where you were born, what state you were born in, they can almost figure out the first 3 digits of your social. If they have a date of birth, then they can go further. So when we're giving out even the last 4 digits of our Social Security number, I want your listeners to know that that's sensitive information, that's your personal identifiable information.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with credit cards as well. Think about it. You know, and I see it all the time. You know, oh, we'll only list the last 4 digits of your credit card number. Well, if it's a MasterCard, we all know it starts with a 5. The number starts with a 5. If it's a Visa, the number starts with a 4. You know, those digits, those first series of numbers are pretty standard. The personal identifiable information on a credit card number is the last 4 digits, or the last 4 digits. And so that's sensitive information. People are leaving their credit card receipts, throwing them in the trash, not shredding them. Actually, it has personal identifiable information. If the last 4 digits of that credit card number or that Social Security number is exposed, then your personal identifiable information is being exposed.
You know, something you said earlier, I'm guilty of. I've never been a wealthy woman. I've never had a lot of really strikingly spectacular assets, except my family. And I always thought, who would mess with my stuff? I mean, so I was 20 years ago, well, maybe a little bit longer ago than that, say 25 years ago, if you'd have said you wanted to do this for me, I'd have smiled at you, and I'd have said, that's very sweet of you, but who wants my stuff? That would have been my attitude.
Right,
Yeah. I want to express to people today that it isn't what you have. It isn't about what you have. It's about the ability to get other stuff in your name. It's about the ability to really ruin your credit, really ruin your reputation. It doesn't have anything to do with what you have. They're not really stealing from you your tangible assets are not what they're after. They're after the ability to be somebody that they're not so that there's no repercussions to them. And it's a whole different story. So I hope if you're listening today, and I'm sorry nobody else has called in, I'm not sure. A lot of times I hear from people later, because this is so early in the morning and they're busy doing things. But if you are in a place where you give out your social security number to a lot of different, or if you're a shopper online, if you do anything like that and they request your social security number, that is literally your ID. Your social security number. You need to respect it, really respect it. So how do people get in touch with you, Mark? We've lost Daniel. I hope he's coming back, but something might have happened, but I've lost his call. So how can you put some information out there to let everybody know how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can call our office, and our office number is 561-939-4849. Again,
say it again.
561-939.
No, just call back.
4849.
Again.
And Danny, if you'd like to give, I think Danny is back on with us. Danny, I can hear you. If you'd like to give your information that someone that has a question would like to call, I've given the office number, but you might be able to give your direct information so they can call you.
You got it. My number is 954-609-0874. That's the Broward County area code.
Mm-hmm. Now, gentlemen, I have a quick question. Because this is such an issue and because babies and young children, Social Security numbers are being used, and this is probably an overly simplistic question, but it's like glaring. Why doesn't the government record when a Social Security number is requested? Don't they know the age of the individual that's getting it? And wouldn't they question a six-year-old making $30,000 a year or buying a house or something? I don't understand this. I mean, isn't everything computerized?
In the age of technology, technology does not communicate with technology. It's incredible, isn't it? One of the things that I mentioned is that last year the IRS sent out $5.2 billion. Of tax return money that went to, you know, someone that was fraudulently filed a tax return.
Wow.
And what's more amazing about that number is that a large sum of that money went to the same address.
Wow. So it was they had stolen multiple identities and had all the checks going to the same place for multiple entities? Is that what you mean?
The same address, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, so there should have been a red flag for that. Obviously.
You understand? So you're exactly right when, you know, because information is out there and the identities know how to use it, and our technology is not smart enough to actually, you know, read the information and understand the information, interpret the information, the identities are able to perpetrate the crime. So technology is not there yet where it can say, well, wait a minute, this is supposed to be a six-year-old that is just creating a felony, or this is a six-year-old that is, you know, actually buying a home.
Yeah, I just recently helped my niece fill out an application for some government assistance, and one of the questions was, it recognized the members. She had to put in all the members of her family, and it shows the members of the family with some of the questions, and it took them away for other questions that didn't pertain to them. But then it asked if anybody in your family was ever convicted of drug trafficking, and it left her 5-year-old son and her 11-year-old daughter on there. And it was asking if either one of them had ever been convicted of drug trafficking. It also asked if her 1-year-old daughter was ever pregnant. And it was like, oh, my God, doesn't the program because it actually showed the year. It showed the age of the child and the name of the child and then asked these questions. Has this child ever been pregnant? Has this child ever been, you know, a person? It didn't call it a child. But so one part of the program recognized the year from the birth date and actually showed the age of the child, but then still included all these questions that were ludicrous. A 1-year-old child being convicted of a felony, a 1-year-old child being pregnant? I mean, really. So it was just, it astonished me as I was helping her fill out the application. That it, on
yes.
one hand, the application could create the age based on the birth date she entered, but then didn't edit the questions that applied to that age.
Absolutely. And what's even scarier is that sometimes a Social Security number has been used in those particular areas that it's asking. And so,
wow.
You know, yeah, it's really, really dangerous and scary.
Well, I think this was an incredibly interesting conversation. And even though, as I said, Shelley and I have researched this and some of the things you shared with us we were aware of, a lot of the things you shared with us we were not. Or let's put it this way, we hadn't thought about them. And I suspect that's the issue in the powers that be. They look at things, but they don't pay attention. They don't record the information that they're being given because everything becomes forms and fill-outs, and as long as all the blanks are filled in, nobody cares what the words are. And a lot of times those are scanned by people who purely and simply scan, or even machinery that scans to make sure that there are no blank spaces. Not what the words are that are in there, but that they're scanned and they're all filled out. So I do think this is like so many other things that we talk about on the show, right, Shell? You know, things are set up, information is given, and we have really, really poor follow-through. So
yeah.
I applaud you, Mark. You are an awesome spokesperson, and you're incredibly knowledgeable. I would love to have you on the show again. Thank you, Danny, for introducing us to Mark. I'm sorry that we didn't have the and he has signed off. But thank you. I'm sorry nobody called in to get the free gift, but we will keep talking about this on our shows because I think you're doing something that's really a good protection. And I think awareness, people don't care about protecting themselves until they're aware that they're in trouble. You know, they hear the lion roaring, but they don't get scared until they see him. You know what I mean? So everybody have a great, great day. Thank you so much, Mark. Danny, I love you. You're doing a good job. And everybody go out there today and have a completely awesome day, and remember your old teachers. Love you. God bless.
Hello?